Blog Talk Radio.
There we go.
Wake those birds up!
Okay, there we go. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's 6:35 p.m. on the East Coast. We're broadcasting from the Paragon Radio. No, we're not. We're broadcasting from the Tiki Room and the WCOC Studios. It's I, Pogoman, and this is Paragon Radio. And my co-host, some say he's bad, some say he's a Viking. Oh, he's Mad Viking, and this is Paragon Radio's Holiday Spectacular.
It's freaking
good evening, Mad
Norbit.
Viking.
It's freaking cold in here, Mr. Bigglesworth.
I'm not Mr. Bigglesworth. I don't know who you're talking to. Well, that would explain why the birds didn't start right away. I had to kick the cage. Oh, that's it. They were huddled up. I don't know why, you know, they didn't start singing. They get warmer if they start singing right away.
Well, you know, this is a case of, you know, the Tiki Room's not really used a whole lot. We come in, they just light up the torches. Got to give it a chance.
I know. We should have, you know, goddamn, guys, who pays the bills around here? All right. And as promised, you know, we said if we got $2,000, we got $2,001 for the xlife.org charity gaming marathon. Thank you. We'll do this again. We got $2,001 this year. We beat last year's record by $1. That's all it takes. You know, in the Olympics, sometimes you beat a record by one thousandth of a second. You still beat the record. So this week, last week, this week, and next week, we will be in the Tiki Room. The Tiki. Hold on. Let's raise the volume on that. I don't know why it's so low. But here we are. That's right. If you're in City of Heroes, come down to Pocket D. Find the Tiki Room and join us. We'll be here till 8 p.m. We'll be here all night. Well, at least until ATM when DJ Texas has his show tonight. Bloody Wolf, can I eat the birds once they're done singing? But to be honest, I think they're animatronic. So I don't know. Well, you know, you could try. If you catch them. Because once they're up and singing, they're very spry.
You definitely get your iron. Aluminum. Steel. There we go.
Wow, everybody's on slow motion today. Holy mackerel. You're all in slow motion today. You've all failed me. Gee. Well, I know what's not slow today. There we go. Here we go.
Oh, God.
What? What happened?
Well, yesterday...
What?
I can work with this. No, yesterday, I was doing which character are you on certain things, depending
right.
on your zodiac. Well, we get the cartoon characters.
Okay.
Rain is Scorpio.
Okay.
Scorpio is Charlie
okay.
Brown.
Do you sell the list?
Not right offhand, but hold on.
I am Virgo. Hear me roar. I don't know. It sounded good.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Good thing I still
okay,
left.
I am Virgo.
You're Virgo.
Yes.
The cartoon character you. Lana Kane.
Who? From where? Wait, say that again?
Lana Kane.
From where?
Oh, from Archer. Katie Seagal's character.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait, that's not a Peanuts character.
No, I said cartoon character. But then it got
right, but that's not...
It got worse, though. We went to Star Trek.
Oh, God. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And for Scorpio.
Oh, okay.
She got Quark.
Based on Scorpio. Based on Zodiac. Based
yeah.
on Zodiac signs. All right,
yeah.
Virgo again.
hold on. Star Trek. All right. Virgo, you got scrolling
through the universe, checking.
You got Saru from Discovery.
Saru from Discovery. I don't watch Discovery, so.
Okay.
Which one is Saru?
If you're looking for someone to labor endlessly over a thankless task, then look no further than a Virgo. People who fall under this sign are perfectly happy to judge through an assignment, which so is without making a peep. However, they get spooked easily, and then they tend to be caustic if you catch them at the wrong time. All in all, they make perfect science officers. So when the audience first meets Saru, he's a scaredy-cat Kelpian who would rather run away from a fight than directly engage. As he grows throughout the first season of Discovery, he learns how to use his fear to his advantage. Through his tireless efforts and unyielding ethic, he manages to lead his ship back from the Mirror Universe.
Huh. Okay. I will have to check it out and take your word for it.
Yeah, but for Rain to get Quark, the Ferengi of Deep Space Nine.
I know. That's I don't know. That's
I'm like, I'm dead. I'm a dead man.
poor you.
Let's see. On the cartoon characters, I was Belle.
Okay.
So, in other words,
Belle
Viking,
from, like, Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, so now it's Viking and the Beast. The Star
okay.
Trek one, I was Deanna Troi.
Okay, that's not bad. So, the cartoon characters, I that was when I was Lana Kane?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, Mr. Viking, since Vikings have really cool with their funerals. yes, we must plan a funeral. We must plan a funeral.
Why is that? No, for me, yeah.
Stick a fork in us. No. Stick a fork in us. We're done. It was announced today the New York Giants have placed their quarterback, Daniel Jones, on injury reserve for the rest of the season. Why the hell is who that? I'm shutting this phone up. Why is every time I do my show, I get these ridiculous calls? Holy shit. Wait, I even hit it. God damn. Wait, I even hit it so, like, it wouldn't, like, ring. Now it's just... Holy shit. Hold on. Now it's ringing louder. All right, that's it. Just stay there.
We're not done yet.
I don't
yet.
Care.
They want to talk
oh, put
to you
over
about
here.
Your car insurance.
Yeah. Oh no. We want to talk about. Yeah, your extended. The best was this guy called about my quote unquote extended warranty. He just needed a few things to update my file. Like what? The make and model of my car. How do you know my extended warranty is up if you don't know anything about my car? And I said this to him. I was like, how the hell do you know any of my extended warranty if you don't even know what type of car I have?
Oh, I can top that one.
He goes, I was like, hold on. Do you have my license plate? No. Then how do you know my extended warranty is up? Do you have my address? No.
Yeah, one of Because one of these things is Social Security. Your Social Security has been turned off. I'm like,
oh, I've heard that one. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
No,
so
it's not turned off.
I deliberately hit the one so I could talk to them. He goes, okay,
right.
Well, this is the Social Security here. I'm glad you were able to respond here. Can you tell me your Social Security number? Dumbass, let me tell you something. One, the government doesn't call you about this. Two, Social Security does not get turned off. Three, no, and I repeat, no government official calls on a Saturday.
Oh, I would have kept him on the phone. You know what somebody did one time? They called him harassing him. He kept him on the phone for like 3 hours, so he couldn't call anybody else to harass him. He would have been like, yeah, my social security number is like, what, 10 digits? Because, yeah, it's 10 digits. Yeah, it has a bunch of prime numbers in it. The guy, oh, one time they called me, and they were trying to double-check my social security number, right? Mm-hmm. He goes, I'm like, no, you're not. He goes, we are the IR. We are the government. We will find out. I was like, if you were the government, you would have had this information already. You don't need me. He goes, we will find the information out. I was like, if you were the government, you could find this information on your own. Why the fuck are you calling me?
Well, my latest thing now when they call in, right after they're talking, and welcome
right.
to ScammerTube. That's right. You're the first person to go on my new YouTube channel, ScammerTube. I would like to get your name and information here while I am tracking your IP address. Click.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Unbelievable. I just want to slap these people around. Just slap. Just slap. It's like the scammers, they don't realize what they're saying half the time.
It's like two.
Like I remember,
at least do a little research.
Or think about what you're saying before you say it. It's. I don't know.
And especially if you're playing a government agent, you do not call on a weekend. You do it right on Monday, 8 a.m.
Yeah, because like. Well, that's why they have to do it on the. That's why they have to do it on the weekend because you know on the weekday they can call the actual government and verify these things.
And the government never calls you once you're in trouble. How do you know you're in trouble? You get a summons or
when they don't call.
On your door.
Hello there. Hello there. This is Rufus P. Jones there, special agent with the U.S. government's governments. Oh, the U.S. governments. There's more than one. Oh yeah, I'm with the chat. I'm with the shadow one. You're with the shadow one. Yes, that's why I'm calling on Saturday. What day to work? What days do you work? Saturday and Sunday. Wait, you work on the weekend? Yes, the regular government works Monday through Friday. The shadow one works Saturday and Sunday. Yeah. We have to work in the shadows. That's why we come out on Saturday and Sunday. The regular one works Monday through Friday. We had to slip the week.
These are
how much do you get paid?
Flags.
Hold on. How much do you get paid? Oh, we get paid as much as the regular government. Well, that is good. Wow, that is good. We only work 2 days a week. See there, but you gotta work awfully hard though. No, it's Saturday and Sunday. Uh huh. And what hours do you work Saturday and Sunday? Oh, Saturday we work 9 to 2. What the hell? Sunday we work 8 to 1. Why 8 to 1? Holy mackerel, 1 p.m. to football games. Come on, we can't miss those.
Yeah, I was about to say.
What? Well, that's only half the season. No. In the springtime, the baseball games come on at 1 p.m. Come on, Ab, we can't miss them either. Oh, sorry. I don't know what I was thinking.
No, that's when you go, have you seen the Washington Nationals? No, really?
Oh, they're Washington National fans. We put them in the bunker. They go into hiding then. They're 1 p.m.
You don't have a football team. You have a Washington team. That's it.
That's
you
right.
You gave up the name.
That's right. Well, they had to. What's funny is that's the best they could come up with, the Washington team. Not even the Washington football team. Just the Washington team. Or did they throw football? I don't know. Did they throw football in there at least? I think they threw football in there.
I don't know. The Washington team.
Yay, we're number one. We're the Washington team. Great. And I think a kid came up with the idea. In all of Washington, Washington, D.C. area, a little kid came up with the name. Bloody Wolfie, that's just sad. I know, that's just sad. A little kid came up with the name. That's brilliant. See, I can explain. Oh, Rufus is still here. I can explain that there. The shadow government was working the day he came up there. We were scrambling for a name. We said, that's a fine idea. Band naming conventions are a go. That's right there. We were all busy working, and we said, okay, pick one. Okay, the kid came up with a good idea. We actually just picked the name out of a, we just picked the name out of a hat there. Okay, where was I now? See, the shadow government. Don't choke down now. Don't choke down. Wait a minute. What are you doing on the phone? Oh, sometimes we're on the holiday seasons. We come out at night. Oh, good Lord. I don't want to know.
See, there you go. You call yourself the Washington Freaks. Freak comes out
it's
at
after
night.
6 p.m.
The freaks come out at it's night.
Night. Oh, no, no, no. You know why? Oh, no. The LGBTQPS ICBM communities, they would be offended. They would think we were making fun of them.
No, we're making fun of Congress because they are freaks. Have you seen some of
that's why. Freaks? Well, that's why now. We can't possibly.
It's like you want to be a freak? Yeah, be a politician. Tell me I'm wrong.
That's right. Washington, D.C., yes. Oh, no. I got to tell you about a freak we had here on Long Island. Actually, in my town, no less. And what's funny is a friend of mine, his sister, swore by her. Her first name was Kate. I can't remember the politician's last name right now. But about not even like a quarter mile from here, the police were investigating this house. Okay. Mm-hmm. Inside the house were all these exotic animals like llama, peacocks, et cetera, right?
Okay.
I swear to God. It's like, who the hell allowed all these animals in this house? Because you need a license, right? Mm-hmm. Well, no one realized this. Somebody's checking on the address. They're going, wait a minute. Two houses down was this Congresswoman, Kate, and I can't remember her last name. And she was in office at the time. And they're going, hey, Kate, why don't you come on out here? This is your handiwork. And they're knocking on the door, and they see her peeking through the, and she's peeking through the blinds, and they could see her. And so they stopped banging on the door, and they knocked on the window right where she was looking. All of a sudden, they could see the blinds snap shut. And it's like, come on out. Like, she would vote for things, right? But it would say, abstain from first vote, voted later on. Now, my friend's sister would go, but look, she voted, and her brother would join in. And he's like 2 weeks younger than me. He's like, okay, she voted after the thing already passed. Do you understand that? She didn't vote originally to help the bill pass. She waited. In other words, she didn't take a stand on the bill. She waited. Do you understand that? You don't know what you're talking about. I was like, people who were at the meeting watching them vote recorded it because it's a public meeting, recorded the vote. Okay? We saw it in order. She was third on the list. Abstain vote, temporary abstain, or whatever they call it, meaning they will come back around to her. Okay?
Right.
Watch everybody else vote. Once it passed, then she voted in favor of it.
Yeah.
Like, in other words, if it didn't pass, she would have voted for it not to pass. It voted to pass, so she went along with the flow. Okay? That's all she did.
Hey.
Since that time, she has been voted out. Because, oh, we have a wildlife refuge a couple blocks away from here. She voted for this beautiful visitor center. Again, my friend's sister. Oh, it created jobs. It also took a quarter of the wildlife refuge away. Everybody said, basically, it's a giant waste of space. Basically, that's what it is, because it took a quarter of the wildlife refuge away. Right? It created 10 new jobs. at the time, yeah, it created construction jobs. You know, it created jobs to create the building. But once the building was done, those jobs went away. Okay? So it created 10, maybe 20 jobs, to be fair. 20 new jobs is all created. But,
well,
you know, it took away 25% of the land for the wildlife refuge. Okay? Shortly after that was the election. She was voted out in the landslide. Somehow, this past November, she was allowed to run again. We don't know how, because she had met her, it turned out she had run the most times. They said apparently she found a loophole. Well, guess what? The people found a loophole. They said no. Guess what my friend's sisters did? I voted for her. Why didn't you people vote for her? This is my friend's sister. She's there. Talk. We got to, you know, about taking action. Here's your chance to take action. Are you going to show up? Nope. Because she'll say something negative about taking action. It's like, okay, guess what? I don't hear your mouth because we're going to take action. You just sit here and talk and put people down, but you don't show up when it's time to do anything.
Yeah.
Okay? The rest of us are going and we're taking action.
Want to point out here, while we're having this rant here, me and Pokemon will pick on anybody regardless of political affiliation.
Yeah, I don't even know what her I don't even know what the fuck her political affiliation. Now it's none, because she's not even in office. Because no one in this area will vote for her, regardless of what her political affiliation is. I think that's the thing. She got on some independent party, but it's like, you know what? See, I wouldn't want to be. Don't want to be affiliated with you. So there you go. No, it's one of those things. It was like her deeds. You know what? It's like, in this area, it's like, we don't care your affiliation. It's like, what have you done for the area? You know, it's like, what have you done for us?
Yep.
It's like, those were two major things. Like, there's a Republican, but you know what? He's knocking down a lot of crack houses. In his first 6 months, he knocked down 30 crack houses. And my friend's sister says, oh, politicians in this area don't do anything. Well, this guy did. Well, who the fuck, what are you talking about? You just said politicians in this area don't do anything. This guy, if you go to his page, every other, like twice a week, he was knocking down crack houses. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Oh, sure. It was like, again, let me guess, you guys were recording it. Yeah, people showed up. They put it on there. There were no crack houses in the area. How do you know that? Because if you know the area, because like she goes to her house, not in the area that, you know, like if, you know, she lives in this area, not where these crack houses are, right? They're near our house and it's disgusting. He knocked them down, cleaned them up. He's having nicer houses built up on there for sale. And people bought the houses.
And in my area, we have people, you know, both Democrat and Republican. They're trying to, you know, work together so that we have more business, not just in the summertime. For those who don't know, I'm in the Catskills, and that's the summer. It used to be all year round. Pogo, you can vouch for this. But now it's just the summer, and they're trying to get it to where it's more than just the summer.
Yeah, unfortunately, especially now with the Omicron Transformers attacking, I mean the Omicron virus version of COVID now. Like, for example, I was saying before the show went on the air, this past weekend, New York got hit with the worst day of COVID ever. This Omicron thing it was like three times the amount in one day, three times, like if you take the worst case of cases that were reported in one day in the history of COVID, one day, I forgot what day it was like triple the number of the previous amount reported in one day.
Well,
so
I just looked at the time.
Yeah, this 7 o'clock. Okay, we have an hour left. I just want to say this: my stepsister and her husband went the other day to see Spider-Man: No Way Home. They said it was awesome. I am going tomorrow to a matinee in the theater I know where it's fairly empty before 3 o'clock. I'm going to a 12:30 show. So keep your fingers crossed for me. Knock on wood, it will be fairly empty-ish. So.
Yeah, but you get the IMAX.
What was that?
You, let me guess. You're getting the IMAX one.
No, I think I'm just going to the regular one.
Okay.
Well, the IMAX one, I think they had limited seating. So I'm just going for whatever I can get to see tomorrow. I would have liked the IMAX, but. Hold on. Let me check my wallet. I think at this point I just wanted to go see it. So, I shut my phone off because of the phone ringing.
You forgot about that, did you?
While that's doing that, let me get some news stories up here and let's get started.
All right, well,
here.
Let's get the obvious out of the way. No updates from Ship of Heroes.
And I have nothing from City of Titans. So. Let's get to some comic book or superhero-related news. First up, Batwoman writers are developing a Gotham Knights series for the CW. Three scribes from the CW's Batwoman will explore new corners of Gotham City in their next DC project. According to The Hollywood Reporter, the network is developing a Gotham Knights TV show spearheaded by Chad... Favish, oh, I hope I said the name right, James Stotoro, oh, God, and Natalie Abrams. I butchered those names. I'm sorry. The new series shares its title with Warner Brothers Montreal's upcoming video game starring Nightwing, Robin, Batgirl, and Red Hood. However, it's still not clear which members of the Bat family will appear on the show, but we could definitely rule out an appearance by the Dark Knight himself, as the series will pick up in the aftermath of Bruce Wayne's murder. So it probably isn't a Batwoman spinoff. I don't know why it's not a Batwoman spinoff, but Gotham Knights logline reveals that the show will center on Bruce's rebellious adopted son, which could be anyone from Dick Grayson to Tim Drake. But whoever he is, he, quote-unquote, forges an unlikely alliance with the children of Batman's enemies, when they are all framed for killing the Caped Crusader. As Gotham's safety reaches an all-time low, this, quote-unquote, renegade band of misfits will stop at nothing to clear their names and become the city's new heroes in the process. Favish, I don't know, Stotoro and Abrams have all worked on Batwoman since its inaugural season. They also have experience on other DC shows. Favish and Stotoro previously worked as writers and producers on Fox's Gotham and Sci-Fi's Krypton. Meanwhile, Abrams penned an episode of the CW Supergirl that aired in 2019. In addition to writing the series, Favish and Stotoro will also executive produce the show with Arrowverse mainstays Greg Berlanti, Sarah Schechter, and David Madden. Abrams will co-executive produce. Okay. Well, there you go. More Batman spinoffs on the way.
Okay.
Oh, Wilmer Valderrama, following from that 70s show. That's right. Will produce and star in Disney Plus's Zorro series. For the first time in 60 years, Disney is producing a new Zorro series. Via Entertainment Weekly, Wilmer Valderrama will executive produce the Disney Plus Zorro series and also star in the show as Don Diego de la Vega / Zorro. And unlike recent attempts to revive the character, Zorro will be set in his original time period and setting, 19th century California under Mexican rule. Growing up, Zorro was one character that made me, as Latino, feel like I could be a hero, said Valderrama. In a statement, as an adult and a storyteller, I have a responsibility in the stories that I help bring to life. To partner with Gary Marsh, executive producer, and Disney to bring Zorro back into the family after 60 years and be a part of the legacy for other children to know that they, too, can be the heroes of their own stories is a dream come true. Disney's previous Zorro adaptation featured Guy Williams in the title role. It premiered in 1957 and ran for two seasons before segueing to four specials in The Magical World of Disney in 1960. According to THR, the new incarnation will be told in a contemporary telenovela style. Disney-branded television president Io Davis described the new series as having ritually drawn contemporary characters and relationships set against the action, drama, suspense, and humor of the original iconic Zorro. Johnston McCulley created Zorro in 1919 for his novel, The Curse of Capistrano. In 1920, Douglas Fairbanks was the first actor to play the title role in The Mark of Zorro. Antonio Banderas starred in the two most recent Zorro feature films. It's been over 16 years since the character was on the big screen.
While you're doing that, those who are here in either Champions or City of Heroes will note that Pogo Man is wearing a unique costume.
I am. Yes, I am. Yes, quite so.
It has been heavily confused that this is a gender bending of Captain Marvel. Which means
I have one thing to say about that.
It means that you're not old enough to remember the 70s and the 80s, where Captain Marvel was originally a male and was known to be the protector of the universe with the quantum bands and teamed up with the likes of the Silver Surfer. The original Captain Marvel returns for our cosmic team-up with Silver Surfer Rebirth number one. It's a limited series that gives Marvel Cosmic a rebirth. Loaded term in superhero comics lore. The publisher has recruited arguably the character's most memorable creative team to make it happen, writer Ron Mars and artist Ron Lim. As you see some of the pictures here on Newsarama, yes, that is Jennifer, the one-time Captain Marvel. Mar-Vell. This is well-remembered in the early 90s run of the Silver Surfer ongoing title. It's returning for a five-issue Silver Surfer Rebirth. Turns out you can go home again. Silver Surfer with Ron Lim was literally the first job with Ron Mars. The first comic page I ever wrote down was we were both kids, and now 3 decades later we go back there to slip right back into the same groove. So in Silver Surfer Remars, they'll be going back into a 90s era of the original run to tell an incontinuity about a mysterious individual stealing the reality gem and use it to, among other things, bring the dead hero Captain Marvel back to life. Put a stop to the havoc wrought by the reality gem's mysterious new world. The one-time Galactus Herald recruits none other than Thanos to find the gem and untangle the mess its new bearer has made. So, yes, one, what Pogo's wearing is the original Captain Marvel. Carol Danvers made a costume in the 70s when she first became Ms. Marvel in honor, in tribute to Captain Marvel when he passed away due to cancer, due to a bomb made by Nitro. Nitro, in more recent terms, was the reason why the first Civil War came to be. There has been several teases of Captain Marvel. He was a Skrull. He's part of Eon. Correct me if I'm wrong. That does have that visual image that that could be Captain Marvel in there. But now they are actually going to bring back him. At least,
right,
as of this moment, it's supposed to be him.
And I believe they're supposed to bring back him. Yes.
Yes. So, Pogo, you finally get some redemption. Because
that's
now
right.
The youth will be able to find out that there was a male.
Well, no. Yeah, that's right. You youths will find out there was a male. A male Captain Marvel before Brie Larson took over. The female Captain Marvel. Meh. See? Meh. I reiterate, in the words of Alto.
Well, it was like, the reason why we're emphasizing this, because every time Pogo wears this costume, he's told he's doing a gender bend.
Oh, that's a great gender bend of Brie Larson's Captain Marvel character. I'm like, no, Captain Marvel was a guy first. No, I think you have your facts wrong. No, I don't. And I have to go to the Wikipedia page and click the link to them. Well, I don't have to read that right now, but I think you're wrong. At the best, we went to the costume contest. I'm saying this out loud because the leader of the group, she's one of the dressed like the female, you know, the Brie Larson Captain Marvel, and she's sitting there agreeing with me, telling the guy, no, he's right. Captain Marvel was a guy. No, I think you both need to check your facts. I'm pretty sure Brie Larson had it done right first. And what you can hear both of us smacking our foreheads going, like, we just want to grab the guy going, hi, you're a dumbass. Please keep your mouth shut from now on. You don't deserve to talk about comic books. Just because it was done in a movie doesn't mean she was first.
And I'm still kind of annoyed of the fact they couldn't give the original Marvel a little tribute. I mean, officially, he is the first hero to die.
I think maybe in the new movie, the Marvel, because it's called something the Marvels, or the Marvels, in the second Captain Marvel movie. And I'm hoping
that could also relate to Monica Rambeau, who picked up the name during the late 80s, early 90s.
And the new one, the kid is supposed to be in it. So, but I'm really hoping that.
I mean, before that, no hero died. They got hurt. They retire.
Right.
They age out. But they never died. And then, you know, not only did he die, he died of cancer. This is the 70s. You know. There was nothing bigger in the 70s than cancer.
Yeah. I even had a copy of that graphic novel. Mm-hmm. Until he became my stepbrother. Friends of his stole a few of my comic books, key comic books I had back then.
Oh.
And and they laughed about it. They laughed that they sold out one. I was like, you pieces of shit.
I was like, okay. You
I don't
want to
get into that. Oh, no. Well, what's funny is now my stepbrother, he's like, his wife is Jehovah's Witness, so he's like preaches the Bible now. It's like, and I tell him, you know, I was like, you know, it's funny now you preach this forgive and forget shit after all the crap you used to pull. You know, it's like he had this boss a couple of years ago, stole from him before he left. And we're like, and that's okay. Well, his boss stole from him. It's like, no. He's thumping the Bible. It doesn't say in there, steal from your boss if he's being an asshole to you. It's not okay. He's thumping the Bible, and he's telling everybody how wrong it is to do this and that and that and that. But it's okay for him to steal from his boss, his ex-boss, if he's being an a-hole to him. No. He's being a hypocrite. Holy shit. I was like, gee, Hold on. I said this. When I was a kid, he stole from me. Does that mean I get to steal back from him the monetary value, what it's worth? No, it doesn't. Okay, next story. Mark Waid and Dan Mora are going to relaunch DC's Batman Superman series. What? Hold on. I'm going to belch. I'm going to hide it from you guys.
Well, Bloody Wolf is going like, not even Superman? It's like, even he died for a like, yeah, yes, he did. But it was in the 90s.
Yes.
Like I
this
said,
was
Captain Marvel.
It was called The Death of Captain Marvel. It was the very first graphic novel Marvel Comics ever did. It was the very first one. They actually did a series of graphic novels. It was graphic novel. It was Marvel's Comics graphic novel number one. It was their very first one they did. It was numbered number one. So, okay. So next year, DC's two most popular heroes will once again share top billing in our brand new series with a superstar creative team at the helm. The publisher has announced via Polygon that writer Mark Waid and artist Dan Mora will launch Batman Superman World's Finest in 2022. According to the official description, the series takes place in the not-too-distant past. I was waiting for them to say not-too-distant future, and I was going to break into the MST3K song. You know the line. In the not-too-distant
future. Somewhere in time next, and space.
Somewhere in the not-too-distant future. Next Sunday.
Well,
anyway,
there's so many versions.
The original version, where it's next Sunday, which explains Mora's retro designs for the title character's costumes. Devastating chemical attack from Metallo sends Superman's powers into overdrive. The Man of Steel turns to Batman for help. Unfortunately, it sounds like the task at hand may be too much for the Dark Knight to handle on his own. That's why the two heroes ask the Doom Patrol for an assist. World's Finest isn't scheduled to arrive until next spring. However, readers won't have to wait that long to get a taste of Waid and Mora's plans for the series. The creators will preview their work in next month's Detective Comics number 1050. The issue, which drops on January 25th, features a backup story that sets up the events to come. In the meantime, DC has revealed an early look at 9 different covers for World's Finest number 1. 2 of these covers, both illustrated by Chip Zdarsky, also pay homage to the infamous Batman slapping Robin meme. Yes! That's awesome! Okay, there's a gallery below. You can view them in the gallery. Okay, so World's Finest number 1 hits comic shops on March 15th. Oh, I got to watch a guy. Hold on. Nobody move. Okay, the first one's just the two of them there. Hold on. Oh, the first one's Superman slapping Batman.
Yeah.
He goes, hey, Superman, looking forward to the first issue of Batman and it's Superman, Batman, World's Finest. Ooh. Oh, hold on. The next one. Oh, I got to get the next one. It's Batman smacking Superman. Hey, Batman, looking forward to the first issue of Superman and Bat. It's Batman, Superman, World's Finest. Yes! Okay, then the next one is the two of them high-fiving each other with the Earth above the high-five. Interesting. The next one, it's like a cyborg Superman and, holy shit. It's Batman wearing some kind of weird bat suit, but he's got like utility belts wrapped all around him. Then the next
must be the 90s Batman.
I was thinking it's 90s Batman and Robin. Batman and Superman. They called Superman and Robin. The next one, it's like 2000 Superman and Batman. What the hell is this one? All right, then the next one, it looks like it's got to be Dan Mora driving the Batmobile. Superman's in the passenger seat, and Batman's coming up to sit in the back of the thing. Then the next one, it's Batman standing on a gargoyle on top of a building, and then Superman just hovering next to him. Mm-hmm. And then the last one, oh, talk about gender benders. It's Supergirl and Batgirl standing back to back.
But yeah, they did make one recently on that.
All right. If you want to see that one, I will share that one. Hold on. First, where is that one? Over here at Dawn Radio Chat. And then I'm going to put this one over here in the coalition on City of Heroes. Yeah, you guys can check that out there. The cover. That's what the cover is. Oh, and DJ Texas has joined us in the Tiki Room.
Mm-hmm.
He's sitting there. He's waiting. He's in the batter's box. I'm up next.
Dun, 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 dun.
Okay, so The Matrix Resurrections is coming out on the 22nd. If you have HBO Max, you can watch it in the comfort of your own home. But there's a featurette that reveals new story details. Warner Brothers has spent most of The Matrix Resurrections marketing campaign keeping plot details to a minimum. But with just over 1 week left until the film hits theaters, the studio finally beginning to open up. A new featurette for Resurrections has made its way online, revealing how the latest installment celebrates the original film's legacy, while also pushing its characters in exciting new directions. You won't find any answers about how Neo and Trinity survived the events of The Matrix Revolutions. Instead, the featurette is loaded with cast commentaries and new footage from the highly anticipated sequel. A few recent trailers have indicated that Resurrections serves as a meta-commentary on the original Matrix, by including clips from the game-changing 1999 film, but according to Keanu Reeves, the new film isn't a retelling, it's a new telling. Okay. Reeves goes on to confirm that Neo has reverted to his former identity of Thomas Anderson. Yeah, Mr. Anderson. He also reveals that Thomas suffered a nervous breakdown sometime in the past 18 years, hence his therapy sessions with Neil Patrick Harris's mysterious analyst. But everything changes when he reconnects with Trinity, who now goes by Tiffany. She also has a husband and kids. Neither of them remember the adventures in The Matrix. Regardless, they can't help but think that their reality isn't what it seems. And as Carrie Ann Moss explains, Tiffany still has her love of motorcycles. Additionally, the clip touches on some of the new characters. Oh, for God's sakes. Who lead her a resistance cell that is searching for Neo to find answers to their own questions. All the cast members also singled out their vision of director Lana Wachowski, with Reeves insisting that you have to be a master filmmaker to make a film like this. And again, The Matrix Resurrections hit theaters and HBO Max on December 22nd. That's Wednesday.
Yep.
Wednesday. This Wednesday.
Yes.
I have HBO Max. I have to go for pre-surgery testing at 9 a.m. When I get back, I shall sit down and watch it. And go, I see it.
The thing is, you'll be watching it while still having some side effects of any anesthesia. So you're going to be watching it.
No. It's pre-surgery testing. My surgery is until the 5th of January. Do you hear me?
Yeah, hello? I heard you.
So it's just pre-surgery testing. There's no anesthesia for pre-surgery testing. I'm going to be fine.
Yeah, but
what?
Just imagine the person who is going to be watching that one tripping out. It's going like,
oh God, yeah.
So green.
God. What I didn't get the first time was, the first one was great, but as the movies went on, they got worse. Did you know? You remember that? It was like, this doesn't make any sense at all, man. It's like they just kept getting worse and worse.
Now, this brings up that are they going to bring in the video game where you had, there's no other way to say it, Mecha Smith. All the Smiths combined into one big Agent Smith.
I don't remember. I didn't see the video game, no.
Oh, yeah, it's there.
Remember he just kept changing every person in the Matrix into a Smith.
Yep.
And he just had to, and it was just like he had to keep fighting all the Smiths.
Oh, yeah, but in the video game, not the MMORPG, no. The video game, separate from that, yeah, you get Mecha Smith. And Bloody Wolfie going, yeah, that was nuts and bizarre.
So what was it, like a giant mecha suit, like Smith thing?
Well, it's all the Smiths combining into one large Smith that you got to fight.
Into a giant Smith.
Yes.
Okay.
Now you're going to be going into YouTube and checking that out.
Look, it's not as cool as Ninja Batman when they're fighting these steampunk mecha suits, these giant mecha steampunk mecha things in like feudal Japan. I don't know how they made them, but that was cool as all hell.
Yeah. It's not I'll form the head, it's
Will form the head. It's Will form the head. Yeah. Jump! Jump!
There we go. Oh, okay. We got Wanda Firebolts also sitting comfortably in the Tiki Room.
Yes. And over in the WCOC Theater, WCOC Studios, Myrn has joined us. Hello. Myrn has some long fingernails. They're purple. They look cool. They're just really long fingernails. Alan is at the costume contest. He was showing his juggling prowess, and now he's showing his yo-yo skills.
Well, he has fun with it, so.
I'm just saying. Now he's practicing his yo-yo.
Okay, we're coming up to the final half hour. You know what time it is.
It's time to open the ancient tome. It's time we go forth. Hold on, let me check. I had a bunch of stories. I want to see if there was any particular story that I wanted to hit that. Okay. The Russo brothers have an interesting documentary coming out. The Russo brothers Marvel vs. DC documentary Slugfest will premiere this month. Last year, the Quibi streaming service died so quickly that it never had a chance to debut Slugfest, the Marvel vs. DC documentary executive produced by Anthony and Joe Russo. However, the doc has a new home and a premiere date. The Roku channel, I have that, will premiere the first episode on Friday, December 24th. Additionally, the Roku channel debuted a new trailer for the series. The series is based on Reed Tucker's book, Slugfest, inside the epic 50-year battle between Marvel and DC. The series starts at the beginning with the creation of Superman and the emergence of superheroes. And as the trailer also illustrates, DC and Marvel needed each other. As it says in the video, without Marvel, DC probably wouldn't exist. And without DC, Marvel certainly wouldn't exist. Okay, so via the Roku channel, I'm not done yet. Via the Roku channel, the Russo brothers also shared the following statements. Audiences will leave Slugfest with a whole new, oh good lord, hold on. Sorry, I got to do this. Audiences will leave Slugfest with a whole new of understanding of how the rivalry between two creative powerhouses shaped the iconic storylines and characters that fans around the world have come to know and love. We're thrilled to partner with the Roku Channel to unpack the fascinating but untold history behind the most well-known competition in comics. Oh, the series will run for 10 episodes with Kevin Smith as the narrator for the show. And if you know what I blew the whistle for, audiences will leave Slugfest with a whole new of understanding. We make of happy of time now.
So one could say with great Superman comes great Spider-Man?
Yes. Or of great responsibility or something like that. I don't know. I know how to say it. I don't think these people know how to say it anymore. I don't know.
Not even one groan. Darn.
I can't. I'm just too tired. I can't groan. I just can't. I just can't do it. Okay. So we now have the Mystic Tome in our hands. It's time for Half-Baked Heroes from Comic Book History. Yes, members, unite. If they can, for we shall read about the League of Regrettable Superheroes.
Here we go.
And for this one, we go to the Golden Age. And
okay.
7-1-1. Yes, his name is 7-1-1. His quote, I'm 7-1-1. And my place is back behind these walls. I don't know. Created by George Brenner, who also created The Clock, the first masked hero in comics. All right, so 7-1-1 debuted in Police Comics number 1, Quality Comics, August 1941. His rap sheet, perjury, conspiracy, poor forethought, and lack of planning. Okay. Sometimes it doesn't pay to be a nice guy. Attorney Daniel Dice. D-Y-C-E, finds that out the hard way when he decides to do a favor for his good friend, Jacob Horn, whose wife is about to give birth. It seems Horn won't be able to attend the delivery because of a little problem. He's about to begin serving a life sentence behind bars. The scheme the two men hatch is so unlikely that it begins on the corniest of sitcoms. Dice will confess to Horn's crimes while Horn visits his wife in the hospital. After a few days, Horn will turn himself in and clear Dice's name. You'd think an attorney would have devised a better plan. Fate plays its hand, and Horn crashes his car en route to the hospital. With his friend dead, no one can clear Dice, who has no choice but to tunnel out of jail and adopt a crime-fighting his identity. Of course, basing his costume persona on his prison number and not the famous convenience store, Dice becomes 7-1-1 or 7-11.
Yeah. I was going to like, oh, come
he
on.
He was there the whole time.
We could have the softy of justice.
When criminals see him, they take a big gulp.
With his beef jerky of truth.
Oh, good Lord. The Cape the Masked Figure who torments criminals by night. See, he works the night shift and returns to his prison cell by morning. Why does he return to his prison cell? His calling card, a mirrored business card with prison bars painted on it to show criminals their future. Oh, good Lord. From a crime-fighting perspective, 7-Eleven's decisions to remain in jail pays off in the form of prison gossip, allowing Dice to eavesdrop on the schemes of his fellow inmates and their nefarious associates. On more than one occasion, the crooks who get busted by 7-Eleven end up in the prison on the same prison as Dice. Apparently, this bonus gives the crime fighter enough satisfaction to keep going back to the big house. For the most part, 7-Eleven puts the screws to common thugs, crooks, and gangsters. His ultimate enemy is a baddie who repeatedly refers to himself in the third person as Oscar Jones, Racketeer. At least one of 7-Eleven's foes is entertainingly bizarre. Brickbat, a bat-masked figure in a lime green suit who kills by throwing exploding bricks. Some of these bricks explode! Okay, what I just said is a quote from a British sitcom. It used to be on MTV. If you can name that, you win a no prize.
Oh. I want to say The Lost Boys or something in that category.
You're close. You're in that vein. It's not The Lost Boys. It was a weekly comedy. It was a weekly comedy / variety show.
Blanked. I mean, I see it, but it's not coming in. You know what I'm saying?
The line is, some of these bricks explode.
Yeah, I'm blank.
Okay, let me finish. I'll give you to the end of reading this. For the most part, 7-Eleven puts the screws to common thugs, crooks, and gangsters. His ultimate enemy is I read that. At least one of 7-Eleven's foes is entertainingly bizarre. Brickbat, the bat-masked figure in a lime green suit who kills by throwing exploding bricks packed with deadly gas at his victims. The reason 7-Eleven hasn't been seen since his first series may be his ignoble method of cancellation. He was fatally shot during a fight with Oscar Jones, Racketeer, in parentheses, to add insult to injury. The only witness to the murder was the hero who would take over 7-Eleven's feature slot in police comics, a psychic troubleshooter named Destiny.
Oh, boy.
Okay. The name of the series I'm talking about? The Young Ones.
Young Ones. I'm going to be kicking myself on that for a while.
It was funny that they only did like 13 episodes. It was funny as all hell. Oh,
it's
bloody hell.
It's the Young Ones.
It's the Young Ones. I'll be right. Let me take this. Hold on. I'll be right there. Hold on.
Okay, for those who are listening here, we'll do a quick rundown of everything that's going to happen with Dawn Radio this week. Coming up in less at 8 p.m. tonight, DJ Texas has his Christmas show. Tomorrow we are expecting to have our Dawn Radio Christmas party, if rain shows up. If not, then we also have Coconut doing her Christmas show. Wednesday, we will have my show. And it was voted by the listeners to be a Bah Humbug show. No Christmas.
What was a Bah Humbug show?
My Wednesday show. Yeah, we was voted no Christmas songs on my show this Wednesday.
What's your show?
It's a Bah Humbug show.
Brilliant.
Yes. Thursday.
Juan the Firebolt has joined us.
Yep.
Juan the Firebolt has joined us.
And Friday. And is Alto. There is no Bunny Night. It'll just be Elf.
What? Oh, that's Christmas Eve. That's Christmas Eve,
yeah.
Right.
And then Christmas Day, Jester with a very Jester Christmas.
Oh, God. Okay. Okay. I'm going over to, I think this is, I want to check to make sure. I don't know if this is a Silver Age or the Modern. I'm hoping this is a Silver Age. I'm mixing stuff up tonight. Yes, we're in the Silver Age now. Last week, we read about Captain Marvel. This week, beware of Captain Science. Good Lord. There are times when good old America. Yeah, I know. She's fine. It's even science. There are times when good old American fists are better than an atom gun. Yes, because with an atom gun, you blow the shit out of half a country. Huh? Okay. Created by Walter Johnson. Debuted in Captain Science Number 1 in Youthful Magazines, November 1950. No relation to Lieutenant Humanities or Colonel Metaphysics.
Oh, God.
I just want to close a book and hit it over my head already before I start reading. Every time I pick that, I think of that scene before you started quoting that scene from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. One of the finest movies out there. Okay. I started watching that movie when I was a wee lad of 11 years old. Okay. I'm aging myself. I think we both are. Anyway. Okay. His name makes him sound like the host of a children's educational television program. But Captain Science is, in fact, the two-fisted defender of the planet Earth, protecting us from such intergalactic menaces as the cat people of Phobos and the deadly dwarfs of Deimos. Are there seven of them? That was my question. What would we do without him? God help us for if we had to find out. Captain Science is Gordon Dane, an eminent physicist and researcher who, in the midst of a camping trip in New Mexico, with his young, orphaned, oddly named protege, Rip Gary, witnesses a damaged flying saucer whiz overhead and crash into the nearby. Hey, that UFO's whizzing overhead. Well, get an umbrella just to make sure they don't whiz on top of us. I said it. There we go. Now the joke is complete. Saddling up, the duo rides to the wrecked spaceship, where a strange force overcomes the youngster, causing him to pass out and leaving Dane alone to face the ship's occupant, trapped in the wreckage and dying from Earth germs, like all aliens do. A blue-skinned alien named Knur, K-N-U-R, introduces himself to Dane and charges him with an important mission, protecting the world from the imminent invasion of murderous aliens, the Beastmen of Rack, R-A-K, supplementing Dane's keen mind and all-around Earthling get-up-and-go is Knur's gift of a mechanical brain, a triangular metal box capable of imparting to Gordon all the knowledge necessary to battle the menace from beyond the stars. While Dane's scientific... Yeah, hold on. I just want to go back to something. Supplementing Dane's keen mind and all-around Earthling get-up-and-go. Yes, because all Earthlings have a get-up-and-go.
He got up and went.
I guess so. I think this comic book did what we're about to find out. While Dane's scientific prowess may be strong, his ethics could use some shoring up. He happily goes along with Knur's plan to brainwash young Rip into becoming the future Captain Science's devoted sidekick. When he wakes, Knur explains, his mind will be conditioned to help you. Oh, good Lord. In addition, Knur explains that Rip has been mentally commanded to hand over his inheritance to Dane. The vast wealth left to him by his father will build for you the laboratory, which will make you Captain Science of Earth. Dane is fine with all of this, as is Rip. But then why wouldn't he be? His mind was conditioned, remember? Yeah, I just read that 2 sentences ago. While not wearing any particular costume, Gordon takes the nonetheless superhero nom de guerre, Captain Science, and becomes our planet's number one defender against alien threats. Operating out of his super scientific laboratory headquarters in the New Mexico desert, a futuristic building resembling a Frank Gehry design, The captain's first outing against the alien beastmen involves routing their agents on Earth. Said agents are cloaked figures who Gordon identifies as the leaders of aggression in World War II who escaped and were never found. Naturally, their most prominent member sports a toothbrush mustache.
What?
Okay.
Toothbrush mustache.
I don't know, but it shows here. It shows here. Issue number 5. It made it 5 issues. The Shark Pirates of Pisces. Wait, there's more. There's more. Along the way, Gordon and Rip pick up a third partner. Oh, God, there's more. Luana, whose father is one of the aforementioned Axis baddies. Nonetheless, she's as dedicated to staving off Earth invasions as her partners, so she doesn't blink when Gordon is forced to blow her pop and his insidious pals to Kingdom Come. It's all in the name of science. After all, with each passing issue, this quote-unquote science referred to in the book's title grew increasingly dubious as the captain and his crew battled everyone from neighboring Martian slavers to conquering colonists from the planet Pathor. Despite increasingly garish covers and a rotating art team that included legends Joe Orlando and Wally Wood, the mission came to a premature end, I do it, after 7 installments. Captain Science never even faced the Beastmen he was originally recruited to squash. We can only hope they're not still out there planning that long-threatened invasion.
Picking up young lords again.
But he did face the Red Devils of Mars, the invisible tyrants. Number 4, he faced vampires, truth or fiction. Editor's note. Captain Science's adventures tend to be loosely built around a single quasi-scientific solution. For instance, in one tale, he demolishes an entire robot army using ultrasonics, like those dog whistles that humans can't hear, despite those same robots had earlier withstood a direct assault with hydrogen bombs. Holy mackerel. Okay, let's see. I picked... Oh, okay. This one is from the modern... No, this one is still the Silver Age. I saw this and I had to read this one.
Okay.
I'm going to read... Hold on. Quote, nerve gas, quicker than bullets, and not as fatal. Created by Joe Gill and Pat Boyette, debuted in Fightin's number 40, Charlton Comics, November 1966. Likely helmet inspirations, a meatloaf pan, a compost bin, the Getty. All these references to his odd helmet. I wonder who this is. It's none other than the Peacemaker. Peacemaker was famously the man who loves peace so much that he is willing to fight for it. Yes, that Peacemaker, or at least so the cover blurb on his first issue would have us believe. Arguably, that description applies to pretty much every superhero. Well, it's true. Think about it. What else are they fighting for, if not peace? Well, Peacemaker took the fight to a different level. For the most part, he didn't fight supervillains or rampaging monsters. His rogues gallery was populated not by people, but by nations. Secretly, Christopher Smith, a peace envoy and diplomat, the Peacemaker, is also a brilliant innovator of assorted non-lethal weaponry, outfitted with a level of armaments one might normally associate with a small country. Smith wages a one-man war on would-be conquerors, petty tyrants, and one of comics' rare mad doomsday preppers. Why does he do it? Because man is civilized, governed by law, Smith explains. But unfortunately, they are madmen who will not obey those laws and will not submit to the sanity of diplomacy. To stay the hand of war and put down trouble-stirring dictators before innocent civilians suffer, the peacemaker believes, like an action buffer between these madmen and global war. Inspired by the example of his parents, his father was a soldier, statesman, and adventurer. His mother was a research scientist. Smith develops an array of varied skills, ranging from spearfishing to engineering, and creates his own personal arsenal of undeadly arms. He carried a gun which fired medicated pellets to stun his enemies insensate, plus knockout gas that can be fired at supersonic speeds. His credo, end conflicts with nonviolent solutions, although he apparently didn't count tremendous explosions as violence. Despite his lofty ambitions, the peacemaker is remembered primarily for wearing a helmet that resembled a toilet seat. And they mentioned that in the movie.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, the helmet and his entire costume was packed with weaponry. The helmet held a laser. It was impregnated. Wait a minute. Should they mention a helmet being impregnated? I don't know. Impregnated with high explosives and a hidden fuse, his gloves became firebombs when a secret vial sewn into them was crushed. The heels of his boots were densely packed plastic explosives. Even his shirt was woven of highly flammable materials. Basically, the peacemaker was always an errant spark away from exploding into a million bits.
I was like, nice job. You blew up the whole army battalion. Yeah, but I can only do it once.
Sorry. Like a bad Daffy Duck cartoon. Oh, shit. Are you reading this thing? Like, so all you may have to do is throw a lighter at him, and he's done for. What's his arch nemesis? Oh, it's just a lighter thrown at him. Ah! Get that away from me! Get that away from me!
It reminds me of Justice League, A New Beginning. You know, the in-between time period between the Justice Society and the Justice League. Batman talking to John Jones.
All right.
Going like, I just want to point out something. I have a $10 million piece of fragment from another world to take care of the most powerful person in one location. All I have to do for you is spend a penny to get a pack of matches.
No! Okay, I'm trying to look for something here. Okay, something silly from the modern age. Okay, ready?
Ready.
Okay. It's called the Scarecrow, but we have the Straw Man. His quote, that's it. Created by Scott Edelman and Rico Rival. Debuted in Dead of Night, number 11, Marvel Comics, August 1975. Known enemies, fire, hungry horses, and flying monkeys. Okay. On the cover of the Scarecrow, is he a man or a demon born in the darkest pits of hell? Spine-chilling spectacular. Okay. So, do we have time? Okay, I got 5 minutes. Okay. As anti-heroes grew in popularity throughout the increasingly 1970s, the bright, primary colored superheroes of yesteryear were joined by or replaced with weird, freaked-out monsters and die-hard killers decked out in black leather. Of the former was the Straw Man, which originally debuted as the Scarecrow, a demonic entity from another dimension whose heroism was mostly a matter of self-preservation and the maintenance of a long-running interdimensional grudge. While other heroes made their headquarters in hidden caves or high-tech fortresses, the Straw Man occupied a mysterious other-dimensional world, accessible only through a seemingly haunted painting. When trouble would arise, typically trouble that targeted the painting's current owner, Jess Duncan, his art critic girlfriend, Harmony Maxwell, and Jess's brother, Dave, the Straw Man's keening laughter would be heard, and the shambling, grinning figure would appear. As a hero, the Straw Man was simply terrifying. His primary power was his strangled and soul-rending laughter, which appeared to have magical powers all its own. With it, the Straw Man is able to control birds, direct the weather, grow new bodies for himself, and more. In fact, the body that the Straw Man wears isn't even his true form, only a grain stalk, shell inhabited by whatever exists in the world on the other side of the mystic painting. The Straw Man's early appearances detail a lengthy battle against the cult of Caliban, an old-fashioned type of get-together where everyone is decked out in blood-red robes and wears gold skulls for hats. But if only early letter writer can be believed, that's not the most interesting thing about the character. In the letter column of one of his earliest appearances, a piece of correspondence allegedly written by a professor of clinical psychology lays out what is really going on. The writer describes the story as a quote-unquote profound psychological essay and celebrates quote-unquote the exemplification of the prototypical authoritarian father figure in the guise of a scarecrow, the frustrated catharsis of libidinal energy towards the Calibi, ingenious,
libido,
and the subtle Freudian overtones, quote, end of quote, which are all too apparent to the trained reader. Well, there you have it. Despite such high praise, the Straw Man has made few appearances. Along with his unconventional appearance and modus operandi, there was also the problem of his original name. Having spent the first two decades of his existence as the Scarecrow, the character ran the risk of confusion not only with another Marvel Comics character of the same name, but also with the well-known Batman villain, a wholly owned property belonging to the competition. Okay, there you have it for now. Okay, that's it. We've got, there you go, for this week's entries of the League of Regrettable Superheroes. Okay, everybody have a Merry Christmas, a Happy Holidays. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. You guys rock. If it wasn't for you guys, me and Mad Viking would just be talking to ourselves. In the meantime, this week, have a Merry Christmas. Enjoy those superhero movies, superhero TV shows, read those comic books and superhero novels. I, for one, am going to go see Spider-Man. No Way Home tomorrow, not Superman. Spider-Man No Way Home tomorrow. Anything you'd like to say in closing, Mad Viking?
And to all,
hello?
Merry Christmas to all, and to all, a good night.
And God bless everyone. Okay. All right. So we'll see you next week. Get ready for DJ Texas show. Tune in to dawnradio.org. The Dawn Rises. Et cetera, et cetera. Sorry. I just got lightheaded all of a sudden from all that reading. Have a good night, everybody. Have a Merry Christmas. Enjoy your holiday season. Finish up your shopping if you need to. And take it away, DJ Texas. And I believe that's it for us.
Okay.
All right. Good show. Thank you, sir.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
You enjoy. Somebody's okay. Running in. And somebody's running past us. All right. I'll put it into this puppy. I guess we'll do a show next week.
Okay.
That will be the last of the year.
Mm-hmm.
All righty.
Talk to you later.
All right. All right. I'll talk to you later, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
Let me end this thing. Where is the... I had to get back to the studio. Oh, there, end of episode. All right. See you then. Bye.